Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Happy Advent to you. Getting closer and closer to the big day. Christmas Day is just 6 days away now. Thanks for being here with us. We're talking movies. We'd like to do, you know, these kind of seasons, beginning of summer and right here as we're approaching Christmas. Nice time to talk about movies because there's all the holiday movies and winter movies at this time of the year. And then there's all the summer movies at the summertime of the year. And a nice guy to talk about the movies, a very nice guy to talk about the movies is with us today, Andrew Petiprin, former Anglican priest and the author of several books, including Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List, is here with us. He's also a columnist at Catholic World Report, the host of the Ignatius Press podcast, and the co-founder of the Spey Salvi Institute. Just can't stop doing good stuff. He just can't stop himself, but he pulled himself away from all that to be here with us talking about movies today. Thank you for coming back for another hour, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Si. I always enjoy it.
I really enjoy talking with you. You bring that, you know, I think you have you got all the education, the Oxford and all of that. I mean, but, you know, we've all been to Oxford and, well, actually most of us haven't, but you got all that, but you also have, I think I don't know how to say this quite, but you seem like a normal person to me, like a normal, you know, like not like you go to a movie and go, I'm gonna try to have the most educated take on it or the most, you know, fancy take, but just like, is this a good movie or not? Should people watch this movie or not?
Yeah, I mean,
Does that hurt your feelings?
I called you normal? That's a great compliment. I really appreciate it because I do try to think that way. I mean, sometimes you can overthink, and I do that from time to time for sure. My wife definitely says that I do. But I try when I'm watching things to just, do I like this? Does this move me? What is this doing to me? Just, you know, don't overthink.
Yeah, yeah. I actually don't have much of a problem with overthinking. I don't know. I think I have a problem with getting it up to thinking. So overthinking isn't really my problem. I need a running start just to get up to thinking. But you got me thinking before we went to the break, and I'm grateful for that. But I guess thinking follows emotions sometimes. And I this critique of It's a Wonderful Life, that somehow the movie It's a Wonderful Life, the great Christmas movie, is morally mistaken in its love for the small and its love for the small town and this small fella and the small life, in a certain sense, lived by George Bailey, is a mistake. That seems like an odd way to read the movie.
Yeah, I think so. You know, one of the great kind of myths of American life is the myth of the self-made man. And in a way, we understand why we have that myth, and it serves a certain purpose. We have an incredible ingenuity as a people. There's no doubt about it, and the world knows that about us. That said, there really is no such thing as a self-made man. I mean, we all come from somewhere. We are all the products of our homes, of our environments, of the places that we come from. And in the world today, we're very deracinated. That is to say, we're uprooted. And I mean, I myself feel this way. When people ask me where I'm from, it's not actually that easy for me to answer that question. I lived in a lot of different places when I was young, and right. There are places that feel more home-like than others. But yeah, George Bailey is somebody who really embodies a world of the past that we should lament to some degree, because he's a man who wanted to get out of his small town, who believed the world was bigger and better elsewhere. And of course, in some ways, he's right. He couldn't go to Broadway shows in Bedford Falls, New York. He couldn't go to the Metropolitan Museum. He couldn't go to, you know, football games or whatever it was that you can do in big cities. But he had a depth of meaning to his existence that he only learns about when it's almost all taken away from him, when he gets to the end of his rope and he's not sure whether he even wants to be alive anymore. He comes to the realization that his life has meaning only because of the people who are in it. And You know, I just think we ought to think more like that. We ought to, even as we live in a world that is, you know, fast paced and definitely rewards people for sort of going up and out. We need to kind of remember where we came from and maybe even try to recreate something like a feeling of coming from somewhere where we don't have it.
There is a kind of, I would say, capitalist thinking. And again, not trying to use the word as a derogatory word, just as a descriptive word, which is almost communist in its love for systems as the cure. And I don't think always that the big time capitalists see that they're proposing essentially the same solution. They're saying our system is different, but the main difference is that our system works. And the fact is, the answer to what is required to have a human life is not to be found in systems. Your system does not work if the problem being posed is, how do I live a fully human life?
Yeah, and particularly not a system of material. I mean, that was the whole problem with communism, is it's a question of how do we manage material so that everyone's needs are met. And what we've tended to say in a kind of a hyper-capitalist response to that is, well, you know, we just have a better way to produce stuff, like, so that you have more of it and you're more comfortable. I think that Frank Capra, who's the director of It's a Wonderful Life, I think he is rightly critical of that kind of caricature of capitalism, and not just in It's a Wonderful Life, but also in other movies that he made. One of my favorites is called You Can't Take It With You, which also stars Jimmy Stewart and Lionel Barrymore and a couple of other actors that he used in some of his other movies. But in It's a Wonderful Life, I mean, it's hard to look at it as a critique of capitalism per se. I mean, George Bailey is a banker. He's a businessman. And I don't think Frank Capra is really trying to say that there's anything wrong with what George Bailey is doing. But what he is trying to say is, there's a way to do that. There is a way to be a businessman that puts the common good ahead of one's own desire to amass large amounts of stuff, right? Yeah. Which is, you know, which that ability to amass stuff is kind of only possible in this sort of system of systems that you talked about before, right? Because if we just live in a system where it's a question of who has the most apples, I've talked about this in other contexts with other people before. Well, the problem is, all the apples are going to go bad if you keep them all, right? Like, you just literally can't keep all the stuff to yourself. But somebody like Mr. Potter comes along in the 20th century and he's like, oh, yes, I can, because I'm not keeping apples, I'm keeping money. And if you don't give me your money, then you might not have a house anymore, right?
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah. So money, the fact of a kind of an abstract kind of store of value, so to speak, it means that you could just keep amassing this store of value. But I mean, there's Jesus himself, you know, in the parable, well, in quite a few of his parables, they have an economic meaning. And the economic meaning doesn't seem to be, as it is sometimes parodied or sometimes kind of not parodied, but reduced to, a kind of hippie ethic of just don't have stuff, man. That's not what Jesus is teaching, but he is teaching that the stuff ain't going to do what you think it's going to do. It's like having all that stuff stored up in your barns. Well, this night your life will be required of you. Now who does all that stuff belong to? That's not an argument against having stuff, but it's an argument against seeing that stuff as the answer for your life.
Yeah, right. And that's certainly the conclusion that we draw from the end of It's a Wonderful Life. I mentioned before Frank Capra's other film, You Can't Take It With You. I mean, in a sense, you could have called It's a Wonderful Life, You Can't Take It With You. Because, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point of the movie at the end. I mean, the Baileys live in this kind of drafty old house that they've refurbished. But the image of that house at the end of the movie is, there is no place in the world you'd rather be than standing in that living room. Nowhere. You know, I mean, like, it is in a sense like a place where something truly, we might even say truly holy, is happening, where, you know, the people are coming together out of love for each other. You know, the very end of the movie is, you know, I mentioned before that there's some unorthodox angelology in the movie, which is to say, you know, one of the main characters, Clarence Oddbody, is a human being who has died, and he's trying to get his wings as an angel. Now, we know that human beings don't ever become angels. Angels are angels and humans are humans. So that's not good theology. But there is some great theology at the end of the movie when everyone gathered in the room sings the great Wesley hymn, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which is, you know, just an absolutely beautiful testimony about the incarnation and about the kind of the true meaning that is given to our existence by the coming into the world of God himself. And George Bailey, although he declares earlier in the movie that he's not a praying man, you know, how many who among us hasn't gotten to the end of our rope, whether we are a praying man or woman or not, and just, you know, maybe we're going to mass, maybe we're doing everything we're supposed to do, but it really is in those moments of desperation where we're tested, where it's a question of, you know, is God real or not? And George Bailey has that experience powerfully. So I think we have every hope that he's going to move forward in his life, renewed, refreshed, transformed. I mean, that's exactly what we all should hope for in our moments of need when God comes to our aid and answers the prayers of those who make them for us.
Yeah, yeah. And it's striking when I hear you talk about it, how a work of art can do so much more than a work of theory, in a sense, in making that life attractive and showing its attractions and showing its values in a way that if I were theoretically, because you're right, George Bailey is a capitalist, or you know, he's a money guy.
Yeah.
He's not the bad guy, but there is a distinction, and there are qualities of life, not just labels, that the art can depict that makes the movie valuable in a way that just a treatise or something on it wouldn't be valuable.
Absolutely. You know, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when the Baileys go to the housewarming party of the Martini family, who own the bar. Mr. Martini is the bar owner and obviously Catholic, you know, Italian immigrants. George Bailey's sort of humane practices as a banker have enabled this you know, new American Catholic man and his family to own a home and to kind of get a share in what we call the American dream, which has a certain look when we consider it from the perspective of somebody like Mr. Potter or Sam Wainwright, but has a much more beautiful look and a much holier look potentially when we look at it from the perspective of, you know, George Bailey seeking the common good, looking out for others, trying to make the community that he's in a sense kind of stuck in better than it was before. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, I don't know, Si. I mean, maybe this is why I'm such a movie guy and a book guy too. I mean, I just love the arts. I love stories because, to me, it's so much better to kind of see something instantiated, something real, and then to kind of go away from it and to contemplate it. It's a powerful thing to kind of look at the life of another person, and great art does that for us. It's a beautiful thing.
So you're not giving up on It's a Wonderful Life as a great piece of art?
No, and I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I have to say, I mean, it won't come to physical violence, I hope, but I will be happy to kind of engage in any kind of debate that might be on the offing to talk about the value of this movie.
Take up that challenge. Somebody call Andrew Petiprin. I want to see this debate on It's a Wonderful Life.
Let's do it.
That's right. He will take on anybody. He's not scared of anyone. I'm just trying to be your Don King, your promoter right now.
Right. I need your side. That's great.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more conversation about movies, including movies that are coming up. I'm gonna make a bet with you that I can name one movie in 2025 that you, Andrew Petiprin, are going to go see in the theater. You're not going to wait for it to come out on video. I've got one in mind. I want to see if I am correct. Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
Carry the faith wherever you go. You can enjoy EWTN television and radio live streams, many of our popular TV and radio shows on demand, prayers and devotionals, and keep up on the latest Catholic news. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com and join the EWTN family today.
film critic and cultural commentator. I'm looking at your face to see if you approve of my description of you, Andrew. The author of Popcorn with the Pope, among other things, is our guest, and we're talking movies, doing our semi-annual conversation about movies. Maybe we could, I could just ask you about some movies that you've seen then, because we'll get to the movies that are coming up, but you kind of started this program by saying, look, it wasn't a good year for movies. Let's just be honest with you. It wasn't, and it hasn't even really been a good few years for movies. But was there anything that you saw over the course of 2024 that maybe if people are on a cold night want to go down to Blockbuster Video and get their video next week that you would recommend they go down to Blockbuster for?
Yeah, definitely, Cy, for sure. One that I saw not too long ago and that I reviewed, in fact, for Catholic Answers, is a movie called Heretic, which was a pretty interesting movie, particularly about the whole idea of apology, of being, you know, of kind of defending one's faith. It stars Hugh Grant, and he has really, I think, reinvented himself in the last decade or so as a really good villain. He has understood, you know, the ability to be this sort of English accented baddie, you know, and he is in this movie big time. And in this one, so he's not like he's played a sort of political baddie and, you know, sort of all kinds of things like that. In this one, he plays a guy who he postures himself as being really interested in getting to the bottom of which religion is true. So he welcomes these Mormon missionary women, these young women, into his home, and he gets them in without being entirely honest. They're not allowed to come in unless there's a woman present, and he says there is. It turns out that's a little ambiguous about whether there is, but they come in and they start talking about their faith, and it quickly turns out. I don't know if you've ever encountered somebody like this, Cy, like you want to talk about, you know, you want to talk about the truth claims of the Catholic faith, and then suddenly you realize you're talking to somebody who maybe knows what they're talking about better than you do, you know, who is
it's basically
really,
my
really
job.
Sharp.
That's my day job, Andrew. That's what, that's what I do.
Well, I guess that's true, but you know, you're selling yourself short. You know what you're talking about, but
well, sometimes you do get in a conversation with someone who surprises you, where you thought the conversation was like, oh, it's this kind of conversation. You realize, oh no, we're at a whole different level here.
Yeah, you think you're starting off with like, okay, so there are four gospels, and you know, there's Jesus or whatever. You know, you start with some very basic stuff, and then you realize like, oh my gosh, okay, this person wants to ask me about, you know, the Book of Enoch and, you know, I don't know what, you know, something really esoteric or whatever. No, well, in this one, so you know, it basically turns into a horror movie or a thriller movie. Although it's not super gory, it's not super gruesome. Although it does have a couple scenes that I think will be a little hard to stomach for some people, but it is definitely not the worst that I've seen recently. But it is a really, really interesting psychological thriller rooted in this question of, you know, what are we doing when we are trying to share the truth claims that we believe in? What are we willing to sacrifice in order to kind of see those claims embraced by somebody who's genuinely curious to get to the bottom of something? And where are there people who are just simply kind of baiting us, maybe even dangerous to us, by trying to engage us in this movie, it's more than just conversations. It's a game. I mean, it's a kind of thriller game, but it was quite an entertaining movie. And I think you know, listeners will come away who decide to go and watch that movie. They'll come away, I think, really, you know, challenged for sure, but also like really with a deeper appreciation of probably some of the truth claims that maybe they take for granted.
Okay, so here's my fear with Heretic, and I have not seen it, but I've read your review and some other reviews, and let me just throw it out there for you that it may lead to a kind of or its conclusion, so to speak, or the conclusion that it leads the viewer to is a kind of indifferentist conclusion, which is like, well, you can't really explain belief, so you just like leave these believers alone, even though it seems utterly foolish to you and probably to most intelligent people. You can't really explain it, so leave it alone.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I get what you're saying there, and I think that that's one way that somebody, I would especially think like a kind of non-believer or neutral or something who goes in to watch that movie, I think they could come away thinking that. I think it's possible you could come away just kind of thinking it's, yeah, it's foolish to kind of believe too strongly in anything. But I also think that for people who really do have deeply held convictions, for people who are convicted of the truth of the gospel, they really could come away remembering that there are real enemies of the gospel as well. And that so the life of the evangelist, which need not necessarily be some like carved out vocation, but just kind of the general posture of Christians going about in the world, is a, you know, I mean, the women, the young women in this movie are Mormons. They're not Catholics, obviously. So like what they're trying to get this man to believe in is not what we believe in. That said, I mean, the whole, especially the first part of the movie, you're just kind of cringing watching them because you think like, they're just like lambs to the slaughter here. I mean, they're way out of their depth and they're kind of putting themselves in a dangerous situation. So,
oh, okay.
You know, I thought kind of from the horror movie perspective, to go back to the good guys and bad guys thing, there's a real bad guy in this movie.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think that anybody could come away from the movie thinking like, oh, well, it's all just kind of, you know, to each his own. No.
Yeah. Is he kind of a false seeker? That is someone who pretends to be seeking, but really has already decided against God?
I would say that's an accurate way to describe him. It's a little more complicated than that. I don't want to spoil the whole thing because there is a little bit of a reveal that is worth it. That's worth kind of the price of admission, but that's pretty much accurate, I would say. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we get those callers sometimes. But everybody's welcome. You can call, not today, but most days, 888-318-7884. Call with your questions or challenges to the faith. Any other movies that you, that 2024, that were not disastrous in 2024?
Here's one that just came to my mind. I'm going to spring this one on you. That was probably my favorite movie of the year that I forgot all about until this moment, which it's called Perfect Day. And it is directed by a German director named Wim Wenders, both with W's, W-I-M. W-E-N-D-E-R-S, Wim Wenders. And of all things, Cy, this is a movie about a man in Japan who cleans toilets for a living. Would that sound like a good movie to you, how does that grab you?
So far, I feel slightly nauseous.
I mean, it is kind of a weird idea.
And it's not
right?
Because it's in Japan. I just want to make clear, all right? I feel like you set me up a little bit by giving it a national location. It's the toilet part that I don't like.
Japan is fine with me.
Yes.
The beautiful thing about it, though, is, you know, I mean, can you imagine, you've already said it. I mean, it's hard for us to imagine a lowlier occupation in this world than somebody who cleans toilets for a living. And, you know, we should be grateful for the people who do that work, no doubt. But this is a movie about a man who clearly has not always cleaned toilets for a living his whole life. He's a reader, he listens to music, he is clearly a man with an education and maybe even at one point had a certain amount of means. I mean, maybe was a real wealthy man. But we don't know why he has suddenly descended to this state in his life where he has this extremely regimented life. He gets up in the morning, he goes to his job, he's the best toilet cleaner in the world. I mean, he's the best. And he goes home at night and he reads his books. He cycles around. He goes and gets dinner. It's like a very, very simple movie in some respects. But then there gets introduced into his story, as you might expect, something enters his life that he's not really looking for to happen. And it transforms him, but it also allows him to help transform someone else. And I'm just telling you, if you're looking for kind of a little movie that is not flashy, that is not trying to be some Hollywood blockbuster or something like that, but just a movie that you can put on, the whole family can watch it. It's in Japanese, so you know you do need to know that about it. But I promise you, when the credits roll, your feeling is gonna be like, wow, I am thankful that movie exists. That really did something within me. It's not a Catholic movie, it's not a Christian movie, it's not an explicitly religious movie at all, it's just a human movie. And I really think we need more of those kinds of things, Cy. So highly
Amen.
Recommend. It's called Perfect Day, directed by Wim Wenders from Germany.
All right. I'll get it. Perfect Day. It's in Japanese. It's got the subtitles.
Got the subtitles. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good one.
Let me ask you this. You've watched a lot of movies in different languages. Are there some languages that it's just more pleasant to listen to a movie? Like, I don't mean languages that you understand, languages you don't understand. Are there some languages where you go, yeah, I like that one better than the other ones?
The answer to that question is yes. And
me too. The language have the same. Italian. You like Italian.
Italian. Yes. I was going to answer. I speak French and German reasonably well. So I like watching French and German movies very much. I don't speak Italian, but I love Italian movies. I love hearing Italian spoken on the big screen.
Wow. That's funny because for me, it's Japanese. I love to hear Japanese people talk. It doesn't sound like anything else. I don't even know where Japanese came from, but they just have a different intonation. They have a different pattern of the way they talk. I love listening to movies in Japanese. And there's been more of these movies where, like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Bullet Train, but, you know, there's more of these movies nowadays that people, filmmakers are willing to go, well, some of it's in English, some of it's in Japanese. You deal with it. I kind of like
it. Let's do it. I love it.
Yeah. All right. I didn't know the music was coming up, so I want more good movies from you for the year. But the Japanese toilet cleaning movie is called A Perfect Day?
Perfect Day, yeah.
Perfect Day. All right. Right back with more with Andrew Pettiprin on Catholic Answers Live. Many people have forgotten just how revolutionary the Bible creation stories are. But the first three chapters of Genesis are a powerful challenge to anyone in any generation who would undervalue human lives. In the Beginning, the new book by Monica Migliorino Miller will take you on a fantastic journey through the first chapters of Genesis, unfolding the richness of life as God sees it. Get In the Beginning today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
When it comes to Catholic teachings about Mary, there's one question we hear more than any other. Where is that in the Bible? The answer? Everywhere. In Bible Mary, the Mother of Jesus and the Word of God, Father John Weiss opens Scripture to reveal a Mary who has been hiding in plain sight. Order your copy of Bible Mary today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I just like talking with our guest, Andrew Pettiprin. Get his book, Popcorn with the Pope. It's about the Vatican film list, and you'll love it. You'll love it. And the Vatican picked out these 45 movies that you ought to see, and I don't know if they're recommendations. They're just, are they recommendations? Would you say the Vatican's like, yeah, you should watch this?
Well, that's one of the mysteries about the list. They just put the list out, and they didn't really explain much. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a funny, if they are recommendations, I mean, some of them are hard to watch, really hard to watch. I mean, one or two of them even have nudity. There's violence in some of them. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we talk about in the book is like, you kind of need a book like ours. You need a little bit of a guide to kind of get your way into the list and see which ones might work for you, which ones should be recommended.
The Vatican has a weird relationship with nudity. I mean, if you go to the Vatican, there's nudity all over the place. So, I mean, that's a weird we're not Catholics aren't prudes, but we are, but we do, but you're supposed to always remain chaste. So it's weird to be Catholic, man. I don't know. Explain it to me.
Yeah.
All this nudity.
Well, I mean, there is a difference between kind of the body to be contemplated as mystery and a body to be desired as an object. And as human beings, we have a lot of difficulty figuring out which way to go.
Right.
And what is a mystery to one person is just, you know, something to lust after to another. But yeah, in the Catholic tradition, we're an embodied faith. And so, yeah, I mean, it does get a little complicated sometimes in the way that we depict the human form and the way that we, in the film genre anyway, the way that we sort of look at what human beings do, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a debate. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's probably a debate we have to have with ourselves as well, in that you got to be honest with yourself. I mean, you just have to be honest. Like this is not good for me. I shouldn't be watching things like this. And if that's you, and it might be different at different stages in your life, but I mean, not everybody has the same temptations or faces the same struggles. So you got to be honest with yourself. Okay. So is Seven Samurai on the list?
No, it is not, unfortunately.
Are there any Japanese movies on the list?
There are. Okay. There are a couple. And actually, I didn't review any of those. And now off the top of my head, I can't remember which ones are which. But one of the critiques of the Vatican film list is that it doesn't have enough non-Western cinema on it, which, you know, if you are, as you seem to be, Sai, like an aficionado of Japanese cinema.
I just like
that's one area.
I hate to say it, but I just like the way Japanese people talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how deep I am, Andrew. That's the depth of my love of Kurosawa is, man, they talk cool.
Well, Kurosawa, I'm glad you mentioned him. Yeah, I mean, there should be a lot of Kurosawa movies on this list, and there aren't. So yeah. that's too bad.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that you liked before we move on and talk about 2025? Anything else that you liked from 2024?
I'll give you one more. It's called The Beast, and it's directed by a French director named Bertrand Bonello, B-O-N-E-L-L-O. The movie is mostly in English, however. So there's that going for it for people who don't like movies in foreign languages. But it's a movie based partly on a short story by Henry James. And it's a real, I guess you could call it kind of a dystopian movie. I mean, it's kind of a startling movie about the future that we're heading towards, particularly with something like AI, where things are becoming increasingly kind of taken away from human agency. Okay. And human beings in the future maybe aren't really going to know what to do with themselves. So this movie is a little bit, it plays to that a little bit. It's not a perfect movie, but it is, I think, a pretty interesting movie that speaks to the kind of technological crisis that I believe we're living through. Not everybody believes it's a crisis, but I do. And this movie kind of might make people think about that possibility. It's pretty good. It's called The Beast.
Not everybody believes it's that's interesting. I'm going to watch that one. That of all the recommendations, that one grabs me. I don't know why. That sounds so interesting to me. So is it a sci-fi kind of movie or
kind of
a little bit futuristic?
Yeah, it's set in three different time. So it's set in the Belle Epoque era, kind of the turn of the 20th century in France. There's one part. Then it skips ahead to the future to the year 2014. So just 10 years ago from now, which by the way, Sai, the movie to me really proposes the idea that around that time, kind of 2014, 2015, something big changed in the world, and we're still kind of trying to figure out what it was. We're not sure what it was.
Everybody seems to know this, and nobody
Isn't
can figure
weird?
It. Yes, something changed about a decade ago. Yes.
Something happened, right? And this movie really puts that on the radar. And then it jumps into the future even more. I think it's like 2044 sometime in the future, 20 or 30 years in the future, where everything's pretty much taken over by AI. There's like kind of mention in the movie of some kind of great catastrophe that has hit the world, and we're not really sure exactly what it was, but everybody kind of lives in their own kind of isolated, you know, kind of siloed, solitary existences. And it's really sad and bleak, but it's a good movie. I mean, it's got some really disturbing scenes in it, but nothing that I would say is, you know, way beyond the pale. I mean, it's a thinking man's movie. Let's, you know, not overthink, but we can think, right? And this movie helps do that. The
all
Beast.
Right. The Beast. All right. And you said most of it's in English.
Most of it is in English.
Right.
That's correct.
All right. So I would, if I were to sum up what I take to be your view of the year 2024 in movies, is you're basically glad it's over. Let's try a new one. Let's start a new year and see how we can do.
Onward. Absolutely. It's time for something new.
Okay. I don't think we're going to get that much new, because I think what we're going to get is a lot more Marvel movies that mm-hmm. have been reshot four times. I don't know if you've read about this Captain America movie that's coming out, but it used to be like they would slap together a Marvel movie and then they would make $1 billion, and they just can't do it anymore. It feels like whoever they made a deal with, let's put it that way. I don't want to suggest anything too demonic here, but whoever they made a deal with is no longer holding up their end of the bargain for the Marvel people.
Yeah, I mean, it could be superhero fatigue. I've heard that term used.
Yeah.
I used to enjoy a superhero movie every once in a while as much as anybody. But, I mean, when it is the entire industry, and when the industry itself is already pretty decadent and also pretty exhausted and out of ideas, it's a terrible recipe for you're only going to produce bad things after a while. And yeah, I mean, the new Captain America, it doesn't interest me one bit.
It doesn't. Anthony Mackie, he's fine and everything, but just the idea of another Captain, really? I don't care.
No, definitely not. Let alone any of the other kind of side characters from the Marvel universe that they're making little TV shows out of and stuff. I don't know where we are in terms of the film industry side, but I mean, my hope is that we're going to have to kind of probably the era of like everybody knows certain big movies is more or less over. And, you know, what we're going to need to do is have shows like this and sort of let me come and tell you about movies like The Beast and Right. Perfect Day and stuff like that aren't on everybody's radar, but are out there. You know, they're not like breaking records, and let's just hope that these directors can find enough money to actually make them, because they do have interesting things to say.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because I have to say, I'm sorry to go back to 2024, but there is something I didn't mention is one of the great filmmakers made a self-financed film that I have not seen, but self-financed starts off problematic. I think what that sounds mm-hmm. like is there's going to be nobody here to say no. What's going to happen mm-hmm. is now this person is going to, and of course I'm talking about Francis Ford Coppola and his movie Megalopolis, which didn't do well at the box office, but
yeah,
it feels like maybe like a train crash that I'd like to see what happened.
Just check it out.
I'd like to see what this was. Any feelings?
You know
about
what
it?
I think? Well, I'm totally with you on that. I think that when you can do whatever you want to do, that's always a dangerous situation to be in. But yeah, someone like Francis Ford Coppola is. We'll see. I mean, if it's just sort of unwatchable decadence, or maybe there's something in there, I don't know. I'm tending towards the former rather than the latter. I will say though, Cy, if you want to watch a Coppola who makes really good movies, look at something by Sofia Coppola,
yeah.
Francis Ford Coppola's daughter. She made actually, and now my mind is not sure whether this was 2023 or 2024. Maybe it was 2024 and it will redeem it. But she made a wonderful movie about Priscilla Presley not too long ago.
That was 24. Priscilla. I think that was 24.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I recommend that one. That was
It's called Priscilla.
Good. Priscilla. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it.
All right. There we go. I'm glad we went back to 2024 then, just to get Sofia Coppola on there.
Circle back. Yeah.
All right. 2025. I said I knew the movie that you would be sitting in a theater seat to see. And so when we come back from the break, I'm going to say the name of that movie and see if I am correct. Andrew Pettiprin, Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Thank you all, because some days the cross is heavy, and EWTN, Father Groeschel and Father Apostoli, I saw them on TV the other day, and Mother Angelica and family help everybody so much. Everybody's with us. You guys will never know.
I listen to you every day. It's a great station, and you do great work. I appreciate it very much. God love you.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, We train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Andrew Petiprin, our guest. You can find his writing at... Give us some places where people can find your writing. Maybe it's more than just Catholic World Report.
Yeah, I've got a lot of great stuff at Catholic World Report. But you can also check out SpaceSalviInstitute.com. Space Salvi, like the encyclical by Pope Benedict XVI. I've got a lot of good posts up there. We also host a great podcast over there. So if you want some interesting conversations with some guests, most of them Catholic, you should check out what we're doing over there. But yeah, there's also AndrewPetiprin.com, my own website. I have some stuff over there. So and of course you can check me out on Twitter. I try to kind of keep my hand in the old game of Catholic Twitter and other things too. So
Do you hate yourself? Why are you doing that? It's torture.
Well, I try to transcend it. And,
I
know,
bet
bring,
you do.
Bring every you know.
Okay. So you're the grace that's abounding. Do you see what I'm saying? Like where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. So you're there to bring the grace.
Yeah, I told everybody on Catholic Twitter, though, they shouldn't eat donuts after Mass, and they got really mad at me, Si. So maybe I don't know, I'm playing with fire.
What kind of maniac are you? Why would you say you shouldn't eat donuts after Mass? What's wrong with you? What was your premise? What happened to you? I'm so deeply offended right now, I don't even know if I can continue the conversation, but what is that about? Why should you not eat a donut after Mass?
I was trying to make too big a point, I suppose, that I don't love the idea that we attach like, you know, unhealthy eating with like, you know, with what should be a really healthy, the most healthy thing you do in the world is go and, you know, go to Mass. And, you know, so we don't want people like to treat their bodies like they don't matter, you know, and that kind of thing. So that's what I was getting at. But I totally get it. I touched the third rail.
That is the third rail of Catholic life. Yes, donuts. Yeah. Next thing, what are you going to do? Take on bingo? Oh, come on, man. Get your life together.
I know.
Actually, I'd be with you if you took on bingo. I'd be with you on that one. But all right. But so you're not against like socializing after Mass. You're not against the parish trying to bring people. You just want them to serve lentils or something.
Well, yeah, people said to me things like, what are you going to do, put out hummus and carrot sticks or something? And I said, that actually sounds great to me, but, you know, I get it. You know, not everybody has the same snacking habits. So, you know, I get it.
I mean, the question is, do you want people to stay and visit after Mass or not? And donuts is yes, they will. You want them to. And hummus and carrot sticks, as that is a delicious snack, by the way. I agree with you on hummus and carrot sticks. It's just gonna be you, and I don't know who else is coming.
I'll be all alone standing there with my healthy snack.
Yeah. Everyone would be like, "Bye, Andrew. Enjoy your hummus," and that would be the end of it. All right. Yeah. So in the year 2025, I believe there is a movie coming out that you will be. I asked you if you have found yourself in a movie theater very much, and confessed to you that I can't remember the last time I was in a movie theater because there's nothing that's grabbed me like I thought I want to see that in a theater. Not since Napoleon, and that disappointed me. I believe in 2025 you will be at Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning 2, the big conclusion to Tom Cruise's second career as Ethan Hunt in the Mission Impossible movies. Am I correct?
That's a bingo, as Hans Landa says in Quentin Tarantino's movie Inglorious Bastards. Oh, sorry, I don't know if I should say that word on the radio, but anyway, there we are.
It's too late. We don't have the technology to beep you.
You can't dump it. So, okay. Well, anyway.
Well, we could dump it if we wanted to, but it's not that. It's not dump quality. All right. Flatter yourself.
Well, anyway. That's a bingo. Yes, I love the Mission Impossible movies. I love them. The last one, Dead Reckoning Part 1, came out in 2023. It was one of the highlights of the year for me in terms of going to the movies, in terms of kind of the payoff, the feeling. I watched the movie now several more times since then. My kids love it. We watch it. I just think that what the Mission Impossible franchise has done in the last several movies, the last few have been directed by Christopher McQuarrie, and he's directing the last one that'll be coming out next year. It's the perfect blend of kind of a buddy movie. You know, it's a movie about friends. It's a movie about saving the world. It's a movie about kind of your everyday kind of espionage, intrigue, you know, James Bond type stuff. But it also, in my opinion, really strikes the right note in terms of like kind of moral message. You know, unlike James Bond, Ethan Hunt, the main character in the Mission Impossible movies, is not a womanizer. And in fact, Tom Cruise, who's now an older actor, refuses to do intimate love scenes with younger female co-stars, even though there is a certain kind of love tension in between him and his female co-stars. So I just think it's the best of all worlds, honestly, these Mission Impossible movies. And by the way, Si, we were talking before a minute ago about that movie, The Beast, that I recommended, that addresses the problem of technology. My understanding at the end of the last Mission Impossible movie was that Tom Cruise was going to destroy AI in the final installment of the Mission Impossible series. I really hope he follows through on his plan and this happens and the world will be free of it. Let's see. Who knows?
My guess now is that you've set up a battle and AI just heard that and now this movie's never coming out. That's it. Probably the final battle has commenced now. Thanks a lot for that, Andrew Pettiprin.
I don't think it was me. I think AI already canceled the ending when they, you know, they heard the dialogue from the last Dead Reckoning movie. That may be what we have to face.
Several things struck me in what you just said. Tom Cruise, like the man, not the character Ethan Hunt, but Tom Cruise, the man, he's not doing love scenes with young actresses?
That's correct. And that follows the precedent that Cary Grant had, actually, late in his career, where he was, you know, he was into his 50s and 60s, and he was still being cast as a leading man, playing against actresses who, you know, that's always been the Hollywood system, for better or for worse, probably for worse. But, you know, usually women are not cast as leading ladies when they get past a certain age, unfortunately. And so, Cary Grant just decided he thought it would be unseemly for him as a kind of father, even a grandfather maybe at that point, to be, you know, he had a lot of wives. He had a funny life. But anyway, he didn't want to do love scenes anymore with young actresses. And so that's what happened. Tom Cruise has followed the same path. And good on him. I think that it really comes through in what you watch on the screen. It doesn't mean that there aren't kind of moments between him and female co-stars where there's clearly attraction or something like that. There is, but right, it sets a different message, I think, to the world to say, I'm not gonna do the same old love scenes I did when I was in my 20s and 30s.
I think that's great, actually. I hadn't heard that at all, and I'm impressed with it. It seems like a grown-up decision to make. Mm-hmm. And one thing I like about Tom Cruise, and I think, of course, there's a million criticisms of Tom Cruise, and I have not bothered to investigate, and I don't know that much about him. But one thing I like about him is and we've talked about this before, he seems to like to make a good movie. Like he's a craftsman. It seems like a vocation for him. Like, this is important. He's not just trying to make. He's not in any of the Marvel movies. He's got a slightly different aesthetic than that, I think. I don't think he fits in the Marvel movies.
I think you're right. I mean, he's made a lot of big blockbuster movies, there's no doubt, in his career. But I think certainly in the Mission Impossible franchise and in some of the other movies he's made maybe in the last 15 years or so, it's very clear to me that he really wants people to kind of go to the cinema and have that kind of experience of the magic of movies that he remembers from his childhood and that we remember, you know? I mean, that it isn't just, you know, splashing around in front of a big screen or a green screen, right? And manipulating like images on computers. That's okay. But I mean, we know he famously does his own stunts. And it's not to say that there's no CGI and there's no green screens in any of his movies. But I mean, he is really trying to give people an authentic experience of, if we're going to point a camera at something and tell a story, we want it to be worth it. Like, this isn't just like another experiment that we're doing in our computer lab, right? Like, we're actually trying to go out somewhere interesting and look at something interesting and tell an interesting story. I think the Mission Impossible movies exceed expectations in that regard.
And your deeper attraction to these movies is that they actually do have a moral message. And it seems to me that the moral message is one of the value of human life. And I remember that Bishop Barron did a kind of famous review of The Martian, where he talked about what was so great about The Martian was this is what we believe about human life. Like this, if you want to know, I mean, he didn't say it this way, but if you want to know what the Christian ethic is regarding human life, the whole world comes together to save one person. That's how valuable a human life is. And I feel like there's some of that in Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. And whenever they're saving the world in those Mission Impossible movies, it's always via saving someone they love or care about. You know, I mean, like I said before, these are movies kind of about friendship. They're about, they're about caring for others and not just sort of in an abstract way, like people out there, which is unfortunately kind of the message that we get from a lot of secular moralizing. Like there's always somebody out there we're supposed to be caring about, which is true. But we only learn how to do that because we care deeply about the people who are right here, who are around us. So Tom Cruise almost always ends up saving the whole world because he has to like save his friend from blowing up or something like that, right? Now this time around, supposedly he's going to go find this, you know, this AI-controlled submarine. And but I have a feeling that he's going to save his friends a lot along the way, and maybe they'll save him too. You know, they trust each other. That's kind of a beautiful thing. He's not a loner. He works with other people, even if he's somewhat off the grid.
Anything else you're looking forward to? Because we're getting near the end here. In the year 2025, anything else that you in your mind you're like, I'm looking forward to coming out.
There's rumors of new movies maybe coming out from directors that I like, Wes Anderson.
The Untitled Tarantino. Wes Anderson Project, it's currently called.
That's right. It's always called that, you know. I'm sort of hoping. I liked his last movie, the Asteroid City. I thought it was fine, but he hasn't quite recaptured the magic of some of the movies that I really really love, like The Royal Tenenbaums or Rushmore. So who knows? Maybe we'll get a good movie from Wes Anderson in the new year. I'm just going to be on the lookout. Who knows? Maybe there will be another Japanese toilet cleaner movie or something like that. No doubt. That'll be the kind of movie that grips me.
Would you come on and tell us about it if that were to happen?
I would be clamoring to get on.
Because that is kind of, I think you made a good point in that there is this thing of discovery that the movies that you hear about are not likely to be the movies that are going to really, that you're really going to value in the coming year. Because in the last year, the movies that you heard were coming out, they didn't turn out to meet their promises. But then you had these surprises like The Heretic and The Beast and Perfect Day. These were not huge, big budget movies. As a matter of fact, even as you spoke about them on the show, probably most people were thinking, I've actually never heard of that movie.
Yeah.
So we need you to go out there. That's what we need you to be, our intrepid reporter back from the world of the movies.
I'm happy to do that. And then when I review these things and put them up and then come on your show, I just love the idea. I want people to love cinema. I think it's an important art form. I think the church thinks it's an important art form. The church has always been interested in art. There's no doubt about that. And one of the beautiful things about the Vatican Film List is the church saying, you know, 100 years after the motion picture made its first splash, is saying, we've come a long way with this art form. And we're not just interested in condemning bad movies anymore. We're interested in elevating and putting onto people's radar and getting people's attention for the way in which this medium can really be good for their souls. And, you know, art doesn't always just have to serve the purpose of, hey, you know, here's a movie about Jesus or here's a movie about Mary. I mean, movies about human beings. You put your finger on it before about the way Tom Cruise makes movies. Like, we want to see people, you know, being human. It's good. It's good for us to see that and to experience that, especially in this world where so much of what we do is being either kind of replaced by or, you know, aided by technology, and the way that we move around in the world is so different than it once was. You know, oddly enough, cinema, which is a relatively new art form that certainly has a lot to thank for, you know, with technological innovation, is still a way which I think allows us to kind of engage deeply with our humanity. You know, even though it's using technology, pointing these cameras at things and using computers to edit them, you know, I think we can have a deeper experience of humanity, which I think inevitably leads us to these bigger questions about who God is and why we're here.
Amen. Amen. Well, if the AI allows us, we'll do summer movies with you once. I know the AI will be taking over soon, but if we can get permission from the AI overlords, we'll have you back on. I love your Catholic way, your Christian way of looking at movies. And like even that suggestion of the Wim Wenders movie, like you said, it doesn't just have to be, there's nothing wrong with a movie about a specifically Christian or Catholic topic, but a movie that's about humanity is a movie that a Christian can value. And Andrew Petiprin, I'm very grateful. Thanks for taking the 2 hours with us.
It's been my pleasure, Si. Thank you.
All right. If the AI allows, we'll see you again. Check out Andrew's work at andrewpetiprin.com. Get the book, Popcorn with the Pope, or find him where he's doing a million things. You'll see him. You'll run into him. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.